Welcome to Board Gamers Anonymous, the podcast about board gamers and the insane fun we have at the table together. This is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And this is episode 322, Talk Me Out of Buying or Backing This Board Game, Marvel United X-Men. We'd like to thank all of our Patreon backers for helping us bring you a brand new episode. All right, Anthony, we are back, and again, we are talking about one of the most dangerous, terribly dangerous areas about board gaming, Kickstartering a whole bunch of miniatures that's going to cost a whole bunch of money and may or may not ever got played, because as we know, that's a thing that actually happens.
Yeah, I think it happens more often than it doesn't happen. I don't know.
It's kind of
This is a particularly good one because this is a game you and I both backed in its first iteration at the full level and have all of the stuff and haven't been able to play almost any of that stuff. And now they're asking us to give them more money for more stuff. So,
yeah. So we are turning our, if you like this, back this kind of situation to more of a positive and yet cautious and yet optimistic and yet fearful feature review, where we'll be talking about Marvel United X-Men, the new Kickstarter that's out there from CMON that has all the miniatures, very light family gateway gaming kind of play. And as Anthony mentioned, it's right on the heels of Marvel United, all of the Avengers stuff that came out previously. So I'm sure it's someplace, somewhere, somehow, you've heard about it, you've seen it. We'll be talking about the X-Men version that's currently on Kickstarter, and not just a general review, but a kind of like an in-depth, you know, expose about this whole thing. And dear God, what should we do? What should we do? So that will be our feature review. Stay with us as we deal with all the existential angst. Now, Anthony, that's not all that's going on with us. Obviously, there's so much more that we're doing each and every week. Again, if you are listening to this on your podcast player on Wednesday, you should know that there's actually a recorded video version of this podcast that comes out each and every Friday on our YouTube channel. We're adding more and more content to YouTube, so please jump over there and subscribe. We'd love to see you over there and love to get more games to the table. All right, Anthony, so before we get into our question of the week, we want to let everyone know about a little TV show that we do on Twitch called BGA Live.
Yeah, every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, we do BGA Live over on Board Game Arena and twitch.tv/BoardGameArena. This week, we're doing Hardback, one of our favorite games from Tim Fowers, the kind of second iteration of the paperback formula. So that is up now on Board Game Arena in beta, and we're going to get together with our Game Master Russ and his crew, and we're going to talk about it and how it plays, and hopefully not make fun of anybody spelling too bad. I don't know. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, Hardback's one of my all-time favorites, and very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, I own Hardback as well. I own Paperback. I think I own almost all of Fowler's games. They're a lot of fun. They're unique. They're very quirky. And this is one of the very few word games that I actually enjoy playing. So I know you are a big word game guy. You're a Scrabble guy. I don't want to be anywhere near that. But Hardback, my friend, it's the board game for gamers who don't like to play word games. So that will be a fun game for all of us. Obviously, join us on Wednesday. Again, if you're listening to this on the podcast, this episode of the BGA Live will be happening 8:30 p.m. So, Anthony, that's what's going on with us. Let's talk about what's going on with our listeners and, of course, now our viewers. What's our question of the week?
Question of the week this week. What classic family game deserves the big Kickstarter treatment?
Oh, no.
Big Kickstarter treatment. Not just Kickstarter treatment. Big. All the monies. So this is kind of a... We've seen this comeback. We had Faraway Island. We had Return to the Dark Tower. There's a couple others floating around out there. Stop Thief, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, hey, we're bringing back this old game. It's, hey, we're bringing back this old game, and it's $200. How much do you love your memories? And so we put the question out there, how much do you love your memories? And so sure. Here are some of the themes that people are talking about. So Jeff mentions domination. He links to it on Board Game Geek. So Domination is a game from 1986, like an abstract strategy type of game. It's very much not much to look at, but I could definitely see them doing something with this, like Santorini style, kind of revving it up a little bit. Drew mentions Battle Masters as a kind of a mesh between Warhammer and the Command and Color system. So honestly, any type of old war game is going to be ripe for that kind of redevelopment.
Sure.
CT Henry mentions Battleship, but he does admit we already have Sonar, which was kind of the first thing I thought. I'm like, isn't Sonar just like Battleship but good? Battleship's not good, guys. I talked about this on the Amazon episode a few weeks ago. Battleship is not good. I don't know. It's not a good game. Scott mentions Torpedo Run with giant upgrade ships. That would be pretty cool. John, and this one got the most likes, mentioned Mousetrap. Oh, so like an actual version of Mousetrap that works, right? Because that game never worked. It's not even a game. Nope. It's a puzzle you put together and then fails. Like it never worked, but it was fun to build. And then last but not least, because this is my pick, Jeffrey mentions Stratego, but with miniatures somehow. So that's what I want. I want Stratego, but like throw all the bling at it. It's one of my favorite games. I played it a ton when I was a kid. So yeah, make a supersized overpriced version of Stratego. I would actually back that.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, it's a cool idea. I guess if I have to go with something that's within arm's length, I picked this up, you know, at one of those auction kind of charity things. I think this was, this is Goodwill, in fact. Shadow Lord. That's how long ago it's been since I played this, but this was kind of an old classic kind of game. And it was really cool because, like, back in the day, this was the idea that you could pick unique characters and try to, through a fantasy sci-fi theme, take over the universe. So it actually had a lot of the kind of early principles of a lot of that kind of cross between Euro games and Amerithrash games. And it, again, tried to do fantasy in space, which is also very cool. So I guess if I had to go for something just generally in that area, but if it was going to be a family game, I guess, you know, the most family game that probably would probably be Candyland. And the reason why that pops into my head is because Funko just recently came out, I think, with like four or five different Funko Candyland Funkos, I guess is probably the proper way to say that. So if you go to Funko Pops, you can find the red little player that you could be the little red gingerbread man. And all of the different characters in Candyland is now a Funko Pop. So it was pretty cool to look at. I didn't get any of them, but I was like, oh, that's really cool. I remember those things. So
right.
I guess the only other way to go would be Operation, because I could see that costing $200. Yeah. And having some kind of like elaborate digital system or something like that. But honestly, I don't want that. I don't want that. So don't do that. A lot of those early kind of classic games were kind of horrifying. So like Perfection, right? Where it just exploded in pieces. I don't need a $200 version where like all the pieces are like gold or something like that. So or a Pop-O-Matic bubble that the die in the bubble is like, I don't know, titanium or something. Like, I just don't need those things. I mean, Kickstarter will do those things, but I just don't need those things. So, yeah. So, again, I guess for, like, as you said, from a classic kind of situation, that would probably be those areas. I guess Crossbows and Catapults was recently kickstarted. That was something I had from my childhood. I was like, oh, this is awesome. And, oh, this is $300. No. Nope. So they are classic. Nope. They are kid games that you grew up with them, but nostalgia has a price, and that price was $300, which I was not going to back. So yeah. All right. Well, great question there. So again, thank you all for answering. And if you'd like to answer yourself, you could join us on any of our social medias or just, you know, yell your answer out a window. We'll probably hear it because social media is everywhere. that, you know, we tend to be. So Facebook, Twitter is probably the best way to find us. Our question of the week is, in fact, our question of the day that comes out each and every day. So join us, let us know what you think, and hit us up because we'd love to hear from you. All right, Anthony, so that's what's going on with our listeners and viewers. Now let's talk about the games that we want to get to the table. Let's talk about our acquisition disorders.
All right, yeah. So this is a fun one based on a game that I played and I liked, but I didn't love. But this new version sounds really interesting. It's called It's a Wonderful Kingdom.
Ah.
So this is a 1-2 player spin on some of the core mechanics of It's a Wonderful World, which is a kind of a drafting game that came out last year, the year before. And, you know, light, medium weight, Seven Wonders type of spin-off type of game. And it was good. It was solid, but it wasn't mind-blowing. It was just yet another game being like, look, Seven Wonders, but different. And you're like, okay. it's fine. If this is the theme I want, this is great. But I just didn't really do it for me. I have not played with the expansion. I've heard that is very good. So a caveat there. This is not my review of that game. I've not played it enough to review it. But It's a Wonderful Kingdom takes the core mechanics of It's a Wonderful World and it makes it into a 2-player only game with a solo version. And now it's in like a fantasy type of world.
Mm-hmm.
And it offers a lot more interaction between the players, which is ironic because now it has a solo mode and it's just a 2-player game. But there's a bluffing mechanism. There's new challenges. And like the core of the idea here is that you have different modules that you're playing with. And each of them is a little bit different and tweaks on the rules, right? So they're all very asymmetrical. And so each game, you're going to pick one of the modules and you're going to play against each other with those two modules, right? The game's divided into 4 rounds. Each of those has 3 phases. There's a split and trap. So you're going to take turns placing cards on 2 piles at the center of the table. And then you're going to take some of those cards into your hand and utilize them. The next stage, you're going to, based on the cards that you collected, choose which ones you're going to build. And then which ones to recycle to like kind of speed up development. And then you're going to produce things in your kingdom, right? In a sequential way based on how you set them out. So like mechanically, it seems like it's doing a lot of really interesting new different types of ideas, but it's like, it's bringing in all these things that you wouldn't think of in a 2-player game. You've got the eye cut you choose. You've got the kind of the bluffing elements here based on what you're taking and what cards you're actually going to play from what you took. And it, at the end of the day, still has the card drafting mechanic that It's a Wonderful World is known for, just in this new kind of 2-player style. So I'm just interested to see how it works, if nothing else. It is listed as a Kickstarter game on BGG, so I think it's going to be Kickstarted. The It's a Wonderful World had 2 Kickstarter campaigns before it kind of got brought to the US, so I know a lot of people backed it that way. So I'm going to keep my eye on it. The artwork was really good in the original game, and it looks to be equally good here, but with like a fantasy spin. And it just has a lot of cool ideas mashed together. Things I like, you know, asymmetrical modules, the I cut you choose mechanic, which nobody uses enough. Love that.
Yeah.
Drafting in general, you know, a clever spin for a 2-player game. All about all those things. So let's see if it works.
No, it's great. I mean, I played It's a Wonderful World and I remember seeing that on Kickstarter, and I love Seven Wonders. So anything Seven Wonders-ish would be something that I would back, but it did look a little too generic. And then when I got to play it, it did play a little too generic, and thematically it really didn't make much sense. Like, it didn't just follow as thematically as my expectations were about the game. So I didn't end up getting it. I haven't played the expansion, so I can't speak to that. But there was a lot of just kind of like jockeying between, like, I don't know if it's man and woman, these tokens as far as getting additional points are concerned. So a lot of it was like there were these kind of like 2 resources and the idea about getting the most of a thing so that you can score that. So it always did seem, and I guess does make sense, to that it probably would play better as a 2-player game. And I actually do like this artwork better. I think that their artwork was fine, but I think that it wasn't imaginative enough for a futuristic setting. It was like, oh, cool, here's another kind of sci-fi building and another kind of sci-fi, you know, deposit area. Like, that's okay. This seems pretty cool. There's a lot of dynamic nature to the card, a lot of movement, a lot of attacking, a lot of color and flavor to it. And like you said, adding the new mechanics is pretty fun. So, yeah, this might be worth backing then. So that's good to see. All right, well, I want to talk about a campaign that's currently up on Kickstarter. And to be honest, like, I don't know too much about the game. I know it's gotten some early reviews. It's called Transmissions Board Game. Transmissions Board Game. Not the board game, but Transmissions Board Game. Share mechanical friends in a lovely Rondell worker placement game. This campaign is currently running and will wrap up on Friday, May 7th. Now, honestly, what drew me to this game, Transmissions, is the fact that it seems to have some of the most adorable artwork about robots I've ever seen. It's got a very WALL-E kind of look to them. They are very much like steampunk, retro, Victorian-looking kind of robots. And they have miniatures in the game that also look very cute and are very similar to the artwork on the cards. So basically the game itself is beautiful artwork, beautiful miniatures, which again, it's all about Kickstarter. But the game itself seems fun and family-friendly. So basically you are playing cards, and these cards will allow you to move around the rondelle. Again, the artwork and the cards are great, and it just allows you to be able to pick up different resources on the board. So as you kind of bump around on the board, you'll be able to take actions at these different locations. Some of the actions will allow you to take additional electricity. Some will allow you to take additional parts. And some will let you get a number of different cards that will help you throughout the game. So some of it is just materials. Some of it's scrap. Some of it will be piping parts. Some of it will allow you to score points at the end of the game because there's butterflies and robots love butterflies. So basically, what you're doing is putting together these different set collections throughout the game. So birds and butterflies score you points, pipes, these cards that you're able to put together. You're actually putting together the pipes in certain combinations to score points. So that's a cool little additional element to it. And then there's a lot of special abilities that you can take throughout the game based upon what your robot's able to pick up. This isn't a complex game. But it's, it fits that kind of niche of being a very cute, adorable little rondelle game. I happen to love rondelles, the idea that you move around the circle and get to pick up actions. So seems simple as first, but again, can be a little more complex, can be a little more fun. And again, a family fun game. If you do want to back this game itself, there is an opportunity to back it at the $40 basic limit. If you do want to get the deluxe version of it, it's going to cost you $54. Obviously, that's really where those plastic robot miniatures come in. So, yeah, $40 gets you the standees, $54 gets you the actual robots, which is the whole point of getting this game, because cute robots. Am I right? Am I right, folks? Cute robots? We could all agree about cute robots.
Yeah.
So, check it out. It may be worth backing because, again, cute robots, it doesn't seem to have anything radically Kickstarter related that, like, if you bought it in retail later, you could not get. But again, it's a new company that's out there. It's a new designer that's out there, Adam West. And, it's something that you might want to take a look at. He's already produced a couple of other games, nothing of major status, but games that have backed and have gone through the system. So Transmissions Board Game is out there and available.
Cute robots.
I know.
That's all I know about it.
Isn't that all you really need to know? Cute robots.
Yes.
Pretty much. All right. So that's all the games that we want to hit the table. Please check those out and let us know if there's any games that you want to hit the table, and we'll talk about it in an upcoming episode. All right, Anthony, so let's talk about the games that we did get to the table and the tablet, and we'll let people know if they should run out and pick those games up, if they're a buy because they're adorable and cute like a robot, or if those games are a play, just like any other game that we tend to kind of come across, if those games are a dodge for many reasons, including being super expensive, or if those games are the dreaded burn and you should avoid them at all costs. So, Anthony, what do you have up for us this week?
All right, I got Dominant Species Marine. This game has been on both of our radar for years since it was first announced.
Yeah.
designed by the late Chad Jensen, who was the original designer of Dominant Species, one of the greatest games of all time.
Yes.
This was developed and promised as a kind of evolution and iteration on that original formula, right? Because that game's almost 20 years old. And what you're doing in Dominant Species is, again, you're one of those different types of animals. In the original, I think there's six different types based on food chain order, right? And you're going about and you're like placing species out on the map and you're putting out new tiles and you're destroying each other and you're fighting for dominance throughout the game, right? And those games were epic. Like Dominant Species is still one of the best games of all time, but it's also like 4 to 6 hours long.
It is.
So the challenge of Dominant Species is that you can't sit down and play it whenever you want because you got to get a group of people together. It plays best at higher player counts. So
it does.
It's difficult just to get it out, right? You need six people for 6 hours, which at that point you're like, well, maybe we'll play Twilight Imperium instead. So Dominant Species Marine, what it promises is same kind of gameplay, same basic idea, right? But instead of 4 to 6 hours, we're talking 2 to 3, right? And instead of 3 to 6 players, we're talking 2 to 4 players. So it kind of brings it back down into the ballpark of what most games are these days, right? 2 to 4 players, 2 to 3 hours. That's what people kind of expect. It's like the norm, right? And it does it by changing the setting a little bit. So instead of, you know, playing mammals down to insects, we're playing reptiles, fish, cephalopods, or crustaceans, the four kind of aquatic-based animal classes. It takes place much further back, I think 60-something million years ago is what they say, versus several thousand years ago, like Dominant Species. And the game consolidates a few things and streamlines a little bit. So in the original, it's kind of famous for its worker placement mechanic where you're going to place your different pawns on the worker placement grid. Everybody does that. And then you activate them in order. It's like programmed, right? There's a few other games that do that. And it's kind of the approach that early worker placement games took, like Bus or Age of Empires 3. This one does it in a more traditional way where you still have like top to bottom and you have to place your workers top to bottom. So if you start on action number 3, you can't then go back up to action number 1, right? You have to keep going down. But when you place, you take the action immediately. So you're not programming out. You don't have to think about who might take an action before you. If it's your turn and you place a pawn, you're doing the thing. So do it when you can do it, right? The domination is no longer on a per tile basis. So it's not necessarily competitive with other players. You're going to check for dominance for each type of element over the entire Earth. So it streamlines that mechanic quite a bit. And when you do dominate an element type, you will then get an extra pawn that you hold until somebody else dominates that element type. So if you, on the first round of the game, you're like, I'm going to dominate the gastropods. Done. You got it. You now have an extra pawn, extra workers in a worker placement game. Very good. You know, have that until someone takes it from you, like until they have a higher dominant score, which they'll have to take that action to get to, right? The animals no longer have default special abilities. Instead, you're going to start with a hand of trait cards. You get to pick one, which is awesome. So you get like kind of a choice of what you're going to do, and it's not tied to each of the animals. It's based on what you draw. Some of them, you do end up with some kind of funny stuff. Like we had flying crustaceans in the last game. Like,
awesome.
Okay. and they're legitimately game breaking. Like that flight one I mentioned, normally you go top to bottom. If you move down to a certain point, you cannot go back up. Flight, you can go up or down. You just can't go between two pawns of yours, right? So you could start at the very bottom and take the dominance action to start the round and work your way up. And it was very frustrating to have someone keep doing that. So they all do balance out over the course of the game, but that is something that kind of breaks the game a little bit in the middle. And these types of changes, like, I don't know, if you've played the game before, you'll hear these and you're like, wow, those are big changes. If you've not played the game, you're like, these seem kind of smallish. And obviously, I'm not going to run through the entire rules of a big, heavy GMT game. But the basic idea is you are this type of animal. You are trying to spread out the most and score the most points on this map. There are different types of tiles. They score different amounts of points based on who's in control of them when there's a scoring. You can choose when to score. There's also scoring at the end of the game for the entire map. And that's basically it, right? Once everybody's placed all their pawns down onto this grid and taken all their actions, special pawns included, and we've all passed, we can have a reset. You swap out all the tokens on the board. You figure out who has, you know, gets the points for the various events and all these other things. There's going to be cards that come out during the game, similar to the original game as well. These give you special abilities or powers or bonuses or extra points, a lot of points on these cards. They can also do some very mean things. This is the fun part of the game. This is why you play Dominant Species. Like, you wipe out all but one of a species on a particular tile, or you go through every tile. One that I played last game was, if there are more species than there are element tokens on a tile, remove them until they're equal. And I got to go through and do that on all the tiles, and it killed a lot of things. So people were not happy, but you know, what are you going to do? So that's the kind of stuff you're doing. It's a highly, highly interactive Euro game of area control, but also kind of worker placement, not hand management, but like resource management type of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Like, Dominant Species, again, is a top 100 game for me. Dominant Species Marine, having only played it a couple times, I already think I like it better because it's more accessible. It's easier to get to the table. I just feel like I could play this game more often, and that automatically makes it more interesting. And it's not like the card version of a big game. You're like, oh, I'm going to play it more because it's a card version. It's like, no, it feels the same. It's just not so much, you know? And for a game like this, like any area control type of game, one of the challenges with Dominant Species is that if you do really poorly, it's not that you can't catch up. It's just at a certain point, it's not terribly fun if almost all your pieces have been wiped off the map, right? Mm-hmm. That can happen in this type of game. It could totally happen. And that's not fun for anybody. But if the game is going to go on for another 3 or 4 hours, it's really not fun. So making the game more manageable, making the worker placement mechanic a little bit more modern and responsive to modern game design, streamlining it down to the 4 different animal types. And honestly, like, the animal type in this game, the difference is really just food chain. Like, if you're a crustacean, obviously the fish and the reptiles are going to go ahead of you. You get to go first, but they're going to break the ties, and that's the major difference. But the trait cards are huge. There's a bunch of other stuff here I could go on forever, but Dominant Species Marine is absolutely a buy. It's not even crazy expensive for a GMT game. I think you can find a copy for like $55-$60. Highly, highly recommend it if you like heavy-ish Euros. It's not even as heavy as the original, but heavy-ish Euros with a lot of interaction. This is one of the best ones out there.
Yeah, I actually did back this through the P500, which is their pre-order system. And for some reason, I never got it. This was back in like 2019. I emailed them. I'm like, hey, game? And they never wrote back. And I was like, hey, game? And they didn't write back. And I'm like, hey, keep the game. But yeah, as you mentioned, you could pick it up for $55 online relatively easy. And if you've not played Dominant Species, and if you ever wanted to just even, like, no pun intended, but dip your toe into the water, Dominant Species Marine really is the way to go. Because when you play Dominant Species, or the first time you sit down to play it, it does feel, it does look, it is in some cases overwhelming as an experience, as a gamer. Because I remember when we first sit down and play, I'm like, why are there like 1,000 different cubes and cones and cylinders? Like, this is like, no. And then once you kind of get into it and you start to play, you're like, oh, this makes sense why this is one of the best games. And again, it's because it does have that steep barrier of entry that most people never kind of breach that and never really, you know, play what is one of the best games of all time. So this Marine version is just genius. And the fact that you can actually play, you know, any of the different species here and actually get the different combinations of special abilities. I mean, there's just so many genius levels of this because the game's already genius. So then, like, opening it up, shortening it, adding variety to it, and yet keeping the core elements to it. Please, please, this man's work is just above and beyond. If you have not played it, pick up Marine. I really feel like you won't be disappointed. I've read literally everything about this. I have not gotten it to the table yet because somebody from GMT didn't send me my copy. But yeah, I'm desperately, desperately, desperately looking forward to playing this. And I think this is going to be one of those games that's going to hit, you know, big with everybody. All right, so on the opposite end of big, crunchy board games, I'm going to talk about the... I mean, it's literally the opposite, right, Anthony? I mean, if you think about it for a second, it's like...
I don't think it could be any more opposite. Yeah, it's instead of a highly interactive Euro, it's a very light co-op.
And instead of cones and cubes, it's highly detailed miniatures of like popular IPs. Like it's literally the opposite of the games. So if you don't want to play a heavy crunchy Euro, got the game for you. So this, of course, is Marvel United, the complete opposite of what we were just talking about. Now, Marvel United was a game that was kickstarted through Kickstarter, and I backed all of the things. I didn't back the map because I forgot, and I didn't back the locations because I really didn't care. I thought I had the map. But Marvel United is all about the Marvel Universe, mainly the Avengers, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which I guess we'll talk about at the end. But let's talk about the game. Now, the game, as I mentioned, is the opposite of Dominant Species Marine because it is these very well-detailed, chibi-ish kind of miniatures of all of the most popular and not-so-popular Marvel characters. So, basically, just like the robots I was talking about before, it's probably why you backed this game. I know it's probably why I backed this game, and same thing for Anthony here. So, yep. Marvel United is a 2-to-4-player co-op game, right? So, unfortunately, there's not big clashing here, but it's basically a co-op game where you are gathering a team of heroes and you are fighting a particular villain that is the centerpiece of the game. The villain themselves brings all of this kind of like gameplay, and depending on what villain you play with, the game is going to be slightly different. I mean, in some cases, more different than others, but we'll get into that in a second. So basically, you have your hero, and your hero has a number of different cards that they're going to put into play. And these hero cards have a lot of different symbols on them. So those symbols are going to allow you to do things like attack, to move. It's going to give you wild symbols and heroic symbols, and those all will come into play. So what you're doing is you're just playing a card. So you play a card into what they call a storyline, and then you do the action on the card. The card might have text on it if it's a special card, so that you'll be able to do some sort of special ability. But primarily what you're going to be doing is one of these very simple actions with your miniature to move around the board on these different locations in order to do different things, of course. So your job is to counter the villain's scheme. So each of the villains have a particular scheme, and they play, again, somewhat differently than each other, and it'll allow some variety of gameplay itself. The game itself has a number of different locations, so your character will move around. You will deal with threats that are on the actual player boards. You will deal with thugs, which are going to stop you in some cases. You will deal with civilians that you'll have to save. So as you play your card, the next person will go, and again, you could discuss who will go next and why they're going based upon the cards that they have, although there is some general co-op secrecy that you're not supposed to like just literally lay out everything that you have, but you do want to kind of collaborate with your team in order to be effective. So at the start of the game, you're going to be able to play 3 hero cards out there on the board, then the villain goes, and when the villain goes, things really get messy. Because the villain's turn is going to move the villain to different locations. And when they land on one of the locations that has a threat card on it, so you have a location, it's going to have a threat card on it because villains are threatening those different locations, the villain's going to do a thing. Usually the thing messes with the people, adds thugs, threatens civilians, and things like that. So you do want to go to those locations. You do want to remove those threats so that you will have a special ability because now you've cleared up that location, but also so that the villain can't progress their master scheme any further. So throughout the game, you are trying to clear up those threats. You are trying to save civilians. you are trying to knock out the thugs. And in particular, you're trying to avoid these BAM cards. These are the really big bad cards and card effects that the villains have that causes a lot of problems for the heroes. Again, it differs based upon the villain that you're facing throughout the game. But as the game goes on, you're just basically drawing a card, playing a card, resolving the action, checking in with everybody else. The person who played a hero card before you, you get to play their card again, at least the special action tokens. You get to play your card. Pretty cool. So you do really want to pair up certain abilities so that you can do what you need to do throughout the game. That's primarily it. You try to knock out two of the three missions. So once those missions are done, you can, you know, punch the villain. And once you knock the villain's health down to zero, then you'll be able to win the game. If you knock out three threats, then, you know, that's great too, because they're one of the missions is rescue civilians, one is defeat thugs, and one's to clear threats. If you could do all three, you'll be able to draw more cards. But once you take out the two, the villain gets a little more dangerous, and he plays a lot more cards into the game. You can up and make this game more complex by adding challenges, which basically take certain cards out of the hero decks. But primarily, that's it. There are solo rules to this game, so you can play solo if you'd like, because again, co-ops are solos in some cases, so that plays along with this. And basically, the whole game and the whole campaign here really is very much about variety of experiences with these different characters, these different villains. And if you did back the Kickstarter with all of the stuff, there is an endless number of variety. So it's the miniatures, man. It's the miniatures, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, that's why I backed it. And like, that's how they like got me down the rabbit hole. Because I was like, oh, $60 and I get all these miniatures? That's great. Yeah. And they're like, oh, and you throw in this, I forgot what that first initial expansion was that you threw on to get to $100. But I was like, yeah, sure, why not? And then like, you could go all in and you get five expansions and you end up with like 90 miniatures. It was like $200. I'm like, it's still a pretty good deal. I mean, it's a good deal if you're going to use them, I guess. I don't know. But they're cool. Yeah. I like them. They're the little chibis.
Yeah. So beyond the basic ones, there's the Adam Warlock one that came in as a special Kickstarter promo. There's Enter the Spider-Verse. So if you saw the movie, you'll get to play with all those characters, which is really awesome because that was a great movie. Guardians of the Galaxy are here. Great movie. Definitely deserves to be in here. There was a big promo box, as you mentioned, Anthony, with all of the additional characters. So that gave you some additional things to play with. There's the Return of the Sinister Six. I have not played that campaign box yet, but from everything I hear, it's the best of all because there's actually six villains in that. So it actually really kind of ups the level of play. There is Rise of the Black Panther. So again, great movie if you want to bring that stuff in. Tales of Asgard, if you want Thor and Loki and everybody else in that kind of universe. And then, of course, because it's Marvel, there is the Infinity Gauntlet, which is this giant plastic gauntlet that you'll get to play with, including Thanos and everyone else in there. And, of course, Yondu was a special character because he's Mary Poppins. So that's a thing. This game, again, it is only really for two groups of people. And again, they do kind of combine and cross over in some cases. One, if you are a light or a family gamer or like just a, like kind of like an uber co-op gamer and you just have to own all the co-ops, this game's for you because this game is a game that you will be able to easily get to the table, right? Pick up a card, play a card, and then watch what happens. So again, as in the world of co-ops, this is definitely something you'll get to the table with a lot of people, including family. Marvel is extremely popular right now. If you back the Kickstarter or if you pick up the expansions later, you'll have endless numbers of combinations. I can't imagine what the math on that is as far as putting all the different teams together, but it works that level. The other side would be obviously if you're a huge Marvel fanboy and you just want to have the miniatures. And if the gameplay is okay, and on a rainy off day, you're actually able to get to the table. Awesome. But again, it's all the miniatures. I mean, again, it's not Arcadia Quest. It doesn't have that complexity and that kind of fun level. It's just kind of like, oh, I got to play a couple of cool cards and do a thing, and I got to watch miniatures go around. So, you know, this game is primarily about the villains. So if you don't get anything beyond the base game, you're going to find it rather bland and generic. You really want to get at least one of the different campaigns. Again, the Sinister Six, I've heard, is very good. But again, choose your flavor. You do want to have more villains because that really ups the gameplay. The more hero characters doesn't do as much. So Marvel United gets a play from me. Again, great, great miniatures, good, generic, but still fun kind of gameplay. And again, if you backed everything and you're a huge Marvel fanboy, then by all means, go out and buy this. Because I did.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, like, for me, it was like one of those things like, well, I backed everything of Arcadia Quest, and I don't even know what those characters are. But I know what these characters are. So
how could I not? Crossover?
No. No, don't make more stuff.
A crossover kit like they did with Kemet and Cyclades, right? Where it's yeah. So now you have, like, I don't know, you have Wolverine or you have Captain America fighting in a dungeon or something. Who knows?
Oh, my God.
Hey, could happen. Could happen. We're getting Ninja Turtles eventually, right? We all agreed on that? Did we all agree? Oh, yeah. Right?
Okay. We better.
All right. So that's the games that hit our table. Again, if you'd like to check these games out, hit us up on BoardGamersAnonymous.com. We're always talking about games, and there's a lot of articles and information to follow up with. All right, Anthony, so now we are on to our feature review. So if Marvel United wasn't enough to stir that acquisition disorder and that pure, pure FOMO, we are talking about talk me out of buying and backing Marvel United X-Men. This is going to be one of those episodes.
Yeah, so this is almost like a behind the scenes type of thing, because we have these conversations off air all the time.
All the time.
like specifically today, like, Chris, you reviewed Marvel United, and then we would have ended the broadcast, we would have turned this off, and then immediately been like, X-Men.
I know.
Like, do I want to spend more on this? And so we figure, why not have this conversation on air, and you all can hear our pros and cons, pros and cons in between, of whether or not it makes sense to back X-Men as well. So it's so hard.
Yeah. So again, let me talk about the Marvel United X-Men campaign. So if you haven't seen this yet, it's currently on Kickstarter, and it will wrap up on Wednesday, May 5th. This is not a campaign that you need to back in order to help a poor, struggling designer. They already have close to $2 million on this campaign. And I think most of it is probably coming from people who wanted to back Marvel United but missed it. So Marvel United X-Men is, not surprising, Marvel United, which I just talked about, but with X-Men characters. Now, if you don't know X-Men, there's a whole episode I could do about X-Men for you. And we will sprinkle some of that into it. But Marvel United X-Men does have some slight variations to the gameplay that Marvel United did not have. Or, as they say, gameplay evolutions. So let's talk about some of the evolutions, because, again, this might be something that you and I might want to back, Anthony, or maybe a reason why we need to get away from this game quickly. So,
yep.
First off, let's talk about the super villain mode. So now, instead of 2 to 4, up to 5 players can play, with one player controlling the villain against the rest. So instead of just a co-op, this becomes one versus many. Now, Anthony was talking about the I cut, you choose kind of mechanic that we don't see enough in games, and that is absolutely true. This is another mechanic that we don't see very often, where one player gets to play against multiple other players. I mean, it is a classic D&D kind of situation, but for a light family co-op games, this is pretty fun, because now the game moves out of, like, you know, alpha gamer kind of situation, and now you can have that player actually play the villain to really do stuff to the next level. So that's pretty awesome right off the bat. And it allows those villain characters to now become playable, which they were not, at least initially. I mean, you were following through whatever it was that they needed to do. But again, that's a thing. Now, in addition to that, there are new supervillain cards that come into the game. There are also new hero cards that, again, come into the game. There are also anti-heroes. So remember when I was just talking about those are you playable? Well, turns out you can play Magneto as both a good guy and a bad guy. So those characters will have their own set of cards that if you did want to play them as a hero in a team, you could do that. So again, that's pretty awesome. In addition to that, and this is one of the biggest developments that I think everyone's going to overlook, each hero now has at least four special effect cards in their deck, where the last set, it was only two. So if you got anybody, right, you were like, generic punch, generic kick, generic move, generic. And then every once in a while, you're like, oh, cool, this is ever so slightly thematic. Yay. Now you have four of those instead of two. So for me, I love that. I really do love that. And it really plays into that. So again, that's the major gameplay changes. Now, that being said, there is still 15 days to go when we recorded this podcast. So by all means, there could be additional gameplay elements that are added or changed here. Now, Anthony and I are big X-Men fans. This one takes place, at least the figures and the characters and their costumes, it takes place in the 90s. So this is my era of like comic book kind of collection. And X-Men were very big for me. So I have a kind of close connection to this. So you are seeing all the 90s X-Men from the comic books. So a lot of the characters, if you were collecting comic books back then, if you were following Marvel and X-Men back then, you're going to get all of the generic heroes that you're kind of very familiar with, which is awesome. That's not necessarily a bad thing. But again, it's your standard Storm, Wolverine, Jean Grey, Cyclops, Professor X, and then you're going to have your villains in here. I already mentioned Magneto, Juggernaut's here, Mystique is here, Sabretooth is here, Beast is here as well. There's also going to be some additional Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, so Pyro, Blob, Toad, very cool, nice to have them here. And now we're going to go into the big number of heroes. I am going to run through this because I think that probably for many of you, none of this is going to make any sense because they are really diving deep into this. And that was some of the conversation, right, Anthony, you and I had earlier of like, how are they going to sell this beyond a base box? I don't know, man. They dug deep. So
yep.
Do you know all these characters before I run into them?
I know random ones because I've read random runs of X-Men. So
okay.
Like, you know, just randomly, I'm like, oh, I know Magic. I know Warpath for some reason. I know Strong Guy. I don't know why I know Strong Guy, but a lot of them I'm like, I don't know who that is. So
yeah, I'll run through them really quick. These are just Kickstarter backing exclusive figures. So if you back it on Kickstarter, you will get these. Feral, Polaris, Daughter of Magneto, Magneto Powers kind of thing. Strong Guy from X-Factor and other things. He kind of gets big. Boom Boom, self-explanatory. Longshot's awesome, but kind of like an offside character. Dazzler's awesome, but again, early 70s, 80s character. Sunspot, you probably don't know. Magic's great. She was originally, most recently in the New Mutants movie. Kind of generic figure here, kind of bummed out about that. Firestar, many people don't know. I do because I remember the 80s cartoon. Warpath came back here multiple times. This is a version of Warpath. Phoenix looks awesome. This is kind of the friendly Phoenix kind of version, not the ones you've seen in the bad movies. Sunfire, no one's going to know. Wolfsbane, you might have seen from New Mutants. Blink is awesome. Days of Future Past, liked out there. Havoc looks great. Havoc is Scott's brother and has like amazing powers, but no one knows who Havoc is. Captain Britain is here. Phantom X is here. Again, you wouldn't know who they are unless you really dove deep into the characters. There are anti-heroes here. Legion, you might have watched the Legion series that was on TV. Awesome. Emma Frost is here. You've probably seen Emma Frost. She's been in a lot of the movies and different things. There are also villains that you probably don't know. Shadow King, Callisto, Deathbird, Arcade, Lady Deathstrike, you probably know from the second X-Men movie. Sauron, Silver Samurai, you probably know from the good Wolverine movie. And then that's primarily what you're going to get in the box. Now, there are, of course, because it's CMON, there are additional expansion boxes you can get. The Horsemen of the Apocalypse. You probably have seen Apocalypse, the movie that came out recently. It was not very good. This is the 90s version of it. You won't necessarily know much about it other than the fact it has Apocalypse in the 90s version. It has all the four horsemen, again, and it does have Death, which is one of the horsemen. Again, if you didn't watch the 90s shows or get the comics, it's probably going to be a little odd for you here. But again, it gives you more of the same thing. Now, beyond this, Storm comes as a special character, which is kind of ridiculous. You do have an opportunity to back, in addition to that, another expansion, which is the First Class, the original X-Men. Not the First Class, the movie, but the original X-Men from like early 60s and 70s. They're here, so you can get Cyclops again and Beast again. But Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver come in here, so people will probably back it. And then finally, you can back the X-Men and also get a lot of the other original stuff that most people weren't able to get retail. So if you did want to get Marvel United, this is a good opportunity for you to do so. It is obviously very expensive to buy everything all at once, but if you do want all the extra figures, this is probably the only way you're going to do it. It's not all going to come to retail. They've already said that. It's not terribly surprising. Again, just like with Marvel United, if you are that kind of co-op fan that loves to get light games, fun games, cute, chibi miniatures to table, this is for you. If you are a hardcore X-Men fan, this is most definitely from you. Now I will leave this to Anthony to try to peel me off the wall because nostalgia.
Ah,
no.
Ah, man. So my X-Men nostalgia is not nearly as strong as yours because I didn't read any X-Men comics until college, maybe. Okay. I watched the cartoon in the 90s, but I was a child, and therefore I was dumb. So I didn't really know what I was watching. I was just like, woo, bright colors. So I'm all about it. Like, and honestly, I would even consider maybe picking up just the base box later in the store just to have those like core 90s character designs, which are awesome. Yeah. I don't know who any of these other characters are. I don't care who any of them are. So the thing is, with the original campaign, it was enticing to me because I'm like, oh, some of these extra characters, like they really go into a lot of different things that I do know, right? Because they're based on the movies, you know, and we've seen all 22 movies at this point. But when you get into this, if you're not like an X-Men super fan, you're just like, it's just a generic something superhero because I don't know who anybody is. I don't like, we were talking about this before we got on here. Where are the characters we do know? Like,
I know,
you know, a Nightcrawler or something, or
Colossus.
I don't know, like Colossus. Yeah, where's Colossus?
Deadpool. Where's Deadpool?
Deadpool, that's true. Yeah, where is Deadpool? What are they doing?
I know, you had one job,
or Cable, or you know, any of those people, like, they are just like recognizable X-Men. There's a bunch of them, you know. Where's Gambit? Where's Rogue? Where, like, where are all these characters that we know? And they're gonna come, I'm sure they're coming, but because we're talking about this 2 weeks before this is over, and so they're gonna throw, you know, there's gonna be probably another, what are they up to on Stretch Goals, like 15, 20? So there's like another 20 of these to come. And then there's gonna be at least, so in the original campaign there was what, five additional add-on buys you could do. We're only up to two here, so there's going to be at least three more, possibly four. So I think that's where you're going to see all those characters that we haven't seen yet, which stinks because you're hiding them behind more money, and I don't like that. So I don't know, for me it's not difficult to say no thank you to this because it's a bunch of stuff I don't know. Now I don't know how to talk somebody out of this when they do know who all those characters are. And they're like, woo, this is fun. Because that's why I paid $300 for Batman stuff 2 years ago. So
sure,
I went down that road. But the other thing about it, too, is if you already have the original base set of this or even the original Kickstarter with all this stuff, how different is it? Right?
Yeah.
How much more gameplay are you going to get? You get more miniatures. That's cool. But sure, how much more game are you going to get beyond what you already have? I think that's the biggest question you have to ask yourself.
Yeah, I think the only thing that you are, again, like you said, beyond the X-Men stuff, if you're an X-Men fan, not backing this becomes more and more difficult. The only thing you're getting at gameplay-wise is the super villain mode where you can play one versus many. Now, I don't know if there will be some sort of crossover or extra packet or if there's some way to do that with your original Marvel United. I'm sure that they're not going to let anyone know that until, like, way after the fact. Like, if there are other additional cards you could pick up or something you can do to be able to do that. I mean, obviously you're playing the villain when you play Marvel United, right? Like, you're moving the villain and doing the villain things. So I mean, you're not strategizing, if there really is such a thing as strategizing in a Marvel United game. So yeah, I mean, I guess, Anthony, you make a good point there. There's the two issues, like I said. The gameplay elements, is it different enough? I don't know. Like you mentioned Batman, right? So one of the interesting things about Batman and Conan before it was that one versus many, right? That deck where you could kind of set up the characters and run them through. That was amazing. If they would have done that for this, woo, that would have been, it would have been done, right? Imagine being able to do that. That's incredible. One character, one supervillain, moving them around. I don't know if that's enough as far as gameplay is concerned. I think the other elements are good, like the anti-heroes are good, having the extra cards are good, but it's not that much. The miniatures is really why you're backing this. I mean, it's one of those weird kind of things where it's like, if you want toys, this is a lot of toys for the money. Like, if you had to buy these toys outside, you'd be like, oh, this is going to cost all the monies. Now, obviously, you're not getting a paint job with these miniatures, so, you know, you kind of take it where it comes. But again, I think unless you're a collector, right, unless you really are going to collect this as a toy, right, as a collectible because you love the X-Men or you love Marvel United, as you said, at first, there's people who, no one's going to know these extra characters. Even in the Marvel universe, you're not going to know all of the characters. No one's going to know all the characters. I will, but that's another story for another day. But with the X-Men characters, for sure. Right. If I brought this out to game night and I convinced my friends to play it, and I was like, cool, look, I got Sunspot and Sunfire. And they're going to go, who? What? What? Is that the same character? I don't understand what that means. Like,
right.
But why would I want to play that thing? You know, like, you know, so the fact that there really isn't a lot of thematic gameplay other than the fact that they added two more quasi thematic cards to the gameplay here. You're not getting much more, right? You can't sell a character. You can't, like, oh, this is a cool miniature with cards that might be a thing. Now, the only thing that, again, that might pull me back, I'm going back and forth on this, Anthony, is because you play the Marvel LCG, right?
Yeah.
Do you feel that is thematic? Like, does that rise to the level? I mean, you're not getting miniatures in that, so there's a trade-off.
Right.
I own Smash Up. I own a lot of Smash Up. I like Smash Up, but honestly, the cards are mainly, this has a number 5, this has a number 4. I mean, there is some efforts to make them thematic, like, oh, zombies come back from your discard pile. Oh, that's awesome. Aliens give you victory points. You know, sometimes it's a little more thematic and sometimes it's literally random. So we do play a lot of these games where it's like, it's just artwork or it's just miniatures. And then like the ever so slight bare touch of thematic gameplay. I don't know. How do you feel like this kind of rates thematically? Like you get the miniatures, you get the art, you get a couple little cards versus the Marvel LCG.
I mean, I guess it's a difference between mechanics and aesthetics.
Sure.
The Marvel LCG, you get middling artwork. Some of it's good, some of it's not. It's not the best artwork by far. And mechanically, like any of the LCGs, they spend a lot of time trying to make them thematically linked to the characters that you're playing, right?
Sure.
They don't do a good job with the story content, and I haven't played through the new Guardians of the Galaxy content yet, but it's... Most games are just, you know, this villain versus these characters and let's see their combos and see how it works. And even then, you know, in a 30-card deck or a 45-card deck, whatever it is, Only 15 or 16 of those cards are hero cards. The rest are just generic cards that you pull in to build your deck. So I'd say it's comparable, but this one, like Marvel United, the theme is just the miniatures, right? That's all it really is. Well, you could slap any theme on this and it's like, okay, now it's another game. Like, and that's okay because the miniatures are amazing, but you're really just backing miniatures if you're buying this, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. I've done it like 20 times. But if you don't know who these characters are, why would you pay that much for them? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I think like the two cards or the four cards, they are somewhat thematic as far as the game's mechanic will allow them to be. So there is a little variation. There is a little, feel to like the classic characters and what they could do as far as that's concerned. But again, you know, as far as like as a spectrum is concerned, from just a miniature and it does 3 damage, you know, down the line to, you know, something super thematic, you know, where it's just like it really is the characters, it really is the story, it really does have the gameplay, it really does play out in some sort of way. You know, games are all abstracted on some level. What is the level abstract here? I don't know where, like you said, again, I feel like this is somewhat close, like you mentioned, somewhat close to the Marvel LCG, just because on one hand, this gives you the miniatures. The other hand, the other one gives you more gameplay mechanics. And they both have, like, good art. I think this one probably has better art. But I don't know. Like, again, I would love for there to be a game that was more thematics. Fantasy Flight just released an X-Men game a couple of months ago that we talked about. And again, a little more thematic as far as what it's doing, but again, also very generic and abstract, which is, again, not a bad thing if you want to play with the characters, or in this case, if you want to play with the toys.
Right.
But I guess the only good thing I will say with the miniatures here is the fact that they are extremely well-crafted. This is not a generic, you know, blow pass. Like, they really do look like the characters. The designs are dynamic. The backgrounds look great. The models look fantastic, and you do get a lot for the money, and you do move them. You know, sometimes you get like a miniatures game and it's just like, here's my miniature, he will stand here for the whole game. These actually do move around for location, so you do get a little feel for that. So I don't know, Anthony, are you convinced yet and not about backing this?
Yeah, I'm probably out, but there's two reasons why I'm out, mainly. The first reason is what I've already said. Like, I don't know who most of these characters are, so it's hard for me to justify spending. Because if I'm going to back this, I got to back it at a level to get all the stuff, right?
Yes.
And if you get all the stuff, I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. Why am I paying for it? The second reason is, this is the second time this has happened to me, where I get a Kickstarter in, and like 2 weeks later, they're like, the next one is up.
I know.
The Batman people did this, and
I know, uncool.
That was a very expensive Kickstarter. It was very difficult to learn, and I couldn't get it to the table before the second season of that game came out. It was like 4 weeks later.
Sure.
And so I was like looking at it. I'm like, there's some really cool stuff in here. I kind of want to back it, but I couldn't bring myself to do it because I hadn't had a chance to really play through what they'd already sent me. Mm-hmm. I hate that. It feels manipulative, and it just makes me kind of mad, honestly. So I'm like, no, I'm just not going to back it on principle. And I don't miss it because I've still barely played that game. Like, having another 5 boxes of stuff would not have been helpful for me. It would have just taken up more space. So I think with this, that's exactly what I would be doing, is just adding to a giant collection of stuff I'm never going to get through. I might pick up the base set like in retail, or maybe just back it here at like the base level, because I do like the 90s X-Men. I know all those characters. It looks cool. And I would be happy to add that box to my collection. But I don't know that would go all in for like, you know, the Apocalypse stuff or whatever the expansions are that they're going to throw on there after the fact. It's just too much for me.
Yeah. We might see a Sentinel, you know, again, it might blow up and just be, again, super expensive, or just, you know, when they had the whole Freedom 5, which was this really huge kind of Defenders of the Realm, which is one of my favorite games, if not my favorite game of all time, as far as, you know, the co-op and everything. And they brought out Sentinels of the Multiverse version of that. And it went from like, I don't know, $90 to $200 to like $400. Even though there was like so much love for both of those properties, I was like, I'm out. And as I've gotten into more gaming over the years, it, you know, when you start gaming, you're just like obsessed with everything because everything's cool, everything's fun. You want that infinite, you know, variability and the replayability. And then you play games and you don't get that infinite replayability ever to the table. So now you have all these extra miniatures, all these extra cards, and you're like, I have everything. And you have that acquisition disorder and you have that completionist feeling to it, but it never really gets to the table. So now as I've gotten older and I've gotten into games more, I'm like, this is enough of a thing for me. I'm good.
Yeah.
I can tap out of this. And that's like, that's a really big thing for me to say. Just like,
I know,
this is good. I have enough of this thing. And I'm just like, I don't need all the things for this game. I don't need to buy that $5 card promo. And by the time I buy all the promos, it's more expensive than the game. So, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do that here, though, because, again,
you can do it, man. You can do it.
Send your moral support to BoardGamersAnonymous.com or Chris at BoardGamersAnonymous.com. Or let me know if you want to play, and then I will back it. Because I need to find real X-Men fans from back in that day so that we could actually like look through the individual characters and really be excited that, you know, rando person who was a background character for 20 minutes in an episode or a movie or in the background of a comic is actually playable here. But I don't know. So, yeah, I think while you might be dodging this, I might be backing this. And I have to say, Anthony, you did a very poor job of talking me out of backing this game.
It's not fair, though. You're like the world's biggest X-Men fan. And I'm supposed to
talk
about backing an X-Men game. Like, I spent $300 on Batman. Same problem. You're going to do the same thing. At least it's cheaper.
I guess. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. I talked myself out of it pretty good. I'm happy now. I'm good.
All right. All right. So there you go. Our brand new feature. And I think our probably newest and longest lasting feature where we just talk about games that we really want and we pray, dear God, to help us not back or buy these games. So this will probably be an ongoing thing. Please let us know if there are any games that you want to be talked out of buying because they're so amazing. And we will try to do that on a future episode, whether it's a Kickstarter or a game collection, because goodness knows Anthony and I have enormous game collections that we picked up over the years, and we still don't know why we're backing the additional expansions and packets. All right, Anthony, that was it was a very cathartic moment for me personally, but we'll see what we will check back with all of you and let you know what we ended up doing with this campaign. Until next time, this is Chris.
Hey, and this is Anthony.
And we will try to save you a seat at our table because there's just going to be so many miniatures sitting there from X-Men United. See ya!